From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
Whatever you do, whatever your business is, it could be really unique, it could be really cutting edge, or it could be really traditional. There's no point in being having an intention to be a world beater if you just can't serve the basic needs of the customers on a daily basis, you know?
I'm Conor Carney, and that's the voice of Gary Purcell, founder and CEO of Allgo, an employee incentives and rewards platform serving some of the best known and largest companies globally. In this conversation, Gary talks about getting his hands dirty and how this can be an advantage against larger competitors, working other jobs to support the business in the early days, and how to use incentives to scale a business. I started out by asking Gary to explain what Allgo does and the services they provide.
Allgo is an incentive, reward, and recognition company. And so what we say about ourselves is that we help clients get the most out of their people. And a lot of the time that could be their own employees, or it could be they want to incentivize their customers or their business partners, their distribution network to achieve certain results. We have a technology platform and a large array of rewards to build programs specifically for clients to help them achieve their business goals through recognition and through rewards. And so now we have a suite of products that help us basically provide a solution to any company in Ireland or abroad that wants to use rewards, recognition, incentives to achieve a business goal.
So what would be an example, just to get specific on kind of one way it might be used?
Yeah, sure. So I'll give you a couple of examples of clients of ours. So Irish Distillers is a good example in Ireland. As you know, they're behind the phenomenal success of Jameson Whiskey and other whiskey brands. So they have about 800 employees located in six different sites around Ireland and in Northern Ireland as well. Everything from HQ with marketing and finance through to bottling distribution, through to manufacturing and distilling, and they have a visitor center. So they have a huge array of different types of people. And what they wanted to do when they came to us was they wanted to embed their corporate core values in the daily working of everybody in the company. So we developed and launched a peer recognition program. And how it works is that everybody in Irish Distillers has a reward budget. And they can use that. They can go onto our platform, which we've branded up specifically for them. And they can look up and find any colleague and any other part of the company, and they can give them a reward. And that reward then is approved by HR. And then the recipient gets notified by email. Their line manager gets notified. We have a communication program that goes out every month. And so people are nominating and engaging and building rewards for living the company values. And every value that's in there has to have an explanation. So people are really looking out for colleagues who are doing the things that Irish Distillers want in general their employees to be doing. So it's a very powerful program. It has huge engagement. It's won awards. And, you know, we've exported that type of peer recognition service to other companies across Ireland and into the UK now as well. So that's one example of internal employee recognition that we do. And we also have other clients, for example, Volkswagen, where we're doing external incentive programs. We're incentivizing dealerships for different types of maybe sales or performance, car accessories, their brand of trade, spare parts, different things like that, where they're really trying to target specific business partners to sell more or market more of their brand. So that type of sales incentive is quite big for us as well. So there are two examples, I could give you 12 examples of different companies that use our products or services for lots of different things they want to do to try to achieve business goals.
And Gary, would you design those? I mean, for example, the peer recognition program, are you involved in designing that? Or are you kind of molding your software product to work within what the client actually wants?
These programs are run on our technology platform, and we've developed that over a good number of years now. It started off being quite basic, as a lot of programs a lot of technology tends to be, and now it's much more sophisticated, but we have a roadmap to develop it in all sorts of directions in the future. So, you know, we have a platform, we've deliberately built it so that it's as flexible as possible, and that specifically it can be branded and customized for each of our clients, because we don't want to run an all-go incentive program. We want to run, you know, an Irish Distillers Barrelman incentive program, or we want to run a Tire Heroes program for Volkswagen, and have it so that it's the company that's getting, you know, the benefit from the program that they're running.
I get the sense that this might have kind of been an iterative service or product, and that it might not be the same as what you initially imagined when you started the business. How did you start the business, and what did the service or the product look like at that stage?
Okay, well, there's a long history. There was no great plan for the business to where it is now from where it started. So, you know, the genesis of it really goes right back to the early noughties. You know, I'd graduated from DCU with languages and marketing back in the 90s. And I don't want to give away totally my age, but a long, long time ago. And, you know, worked in graduate programs for some big companies like Kerry Group, like United Parcel Service, Cable and Wireless, a very successful startup back in the late 90s, early 2000s called Conduit, that was involved in directory inquiry services, which was very big at the time. And that company floated on the stock market and had a roller coaster ride. And that was really my MBA. That the 6 years I spent there was what molded me into seeing how entrepreneurs, you know, run and grow businesses. So after that whole adventure was over, I was at a slight bit of a loose end, and I basically helped a friend of mine from college set up a gifting website for weddings, believe it or not, a wedding list service. And we launched Wedding Wish List, I think, in 2004. It was great fun. It was like 2 years of startup crack. We had a service where you could go and onto a website, you could put gifts together from lots of different shops across the country that we signed up to our platform. It was actually probably a little bit ahead of its time, but after a couple of years, the flaws in both the business plan and the market itself meant that it wasn't going to be a sustainable business in that format. And so at that point, we closed it down. I took over what was left of it. I launched on the back of it allgifts.ie, so a more open sort of gifting platform that didn't have to have a wedding involved in order to buy a gift. Launched that smack bang before Christmas 2008. Fantastic timing, just before the recession really, really hit. I remember I took the decision I was going to launch, and I was going to spend 30,000 euros on radio ads. I thought this would be the big thing, because I thought radio ads, get our name out there, people will love this, go on, buy a gift. You can instantly send your gift in a digital format by email to anyone else in the country or in the world. And I thought this would be a fantastic innovation. And we spent 30,000 on radio ads, and our sales were 30,000 for that Christmas. So that was a little bit of a kick in the teeth. But, you know, I persisted at it for the next few years. But what I noticed was it wasn't, and maybe this was because of the recession, but it was just consumers that were coming onto the website and buying gifts. It was a lot of companies. So they got me thinking about, well, if companies are spending money on gifts, what are they doing? Well, they're thanking their staff, they're rewarding their loyal customers, they're incentivizing sales. And so after a while, I decided, well, why don't I develop a platform specifically for corporates, where they don't have to get out their credit card and just buy a gift. They can actually have a branded, customized, you know, purpose-built incentive or reward program. So, you know, I started to do that sort of in a vacuum, didn't really realize that this was part of a massive global industry or anything like that at the time. Developed a point system, and our first customer was Citroen. And back in about 2010, 2011, I was developing this platform that would, you know, that would be points based and would allow, you know, points to be customized and redeemed on a branded website for customers. I didn't have any client in mind for it. But one day I was in the office, and the phone rang, and because it was only myself and I think one intern at the time, I picked up the phone, and this lady at the other end said, I'm just ringing. We ordered some 6 bottles of champagne from you on your allgifts.ie website yesterday, and I just want to make sure it's going to be here by lunchtime, because it's for our MD who's actually leaving the company, and it's for a big do that we're doing at lunchtime today. So I said, oh, right, no problem. I looked up in the system, and I saw that not only were they not going to get this champagne delivered to them by lunchtime, the order had been completely messed up and it wasn't going to get out to them at all. I basically said, No problem. We'll have that to you by lunchtime. The company was Citroën, and they were based out in out near Blanchardstown. So I jumped in the car, went down to the off license, bought a nice 6 bottles of champagne, packaged it up somehow, drove it out there, delivered it to them, and they were absolutely delighted. And as I was leaving, they said, you know, that's great service, thanks very much. And, you know, what else do you guys do? And I sort of said to them, well, we do incentive programs. We do points-based incentive programs, actually, for companies. You know, that's our main thing, even though, you know, we hadn't even got the product ready at that stage. And lo and behold, about 2 or 3 months later, I got a phone call back from the same person in Citroën saying, look, they've been told that by their parent company in the UK that they had to implement a channel incentive with all their dealer, the dealer network in Ireland, and could I come in straight away and talk to them about this points platform that I mentioned? And, you know, they became our first customer, and we were delighted to test our product and have a customer straight away. And from there, we developed a numerous other customers from that one.
I'm assuming that at the time before you jumped in your car and went to the off license, I'm assuming that you didn't really think that anything would come from this, or that you may end up getting your first kind of big corporate client just from doing this one thing.
From doing that one thing, absolutely not. Like, that was just making sure that we're not letting down a customer, you know, which I guess is a big ethos for us as well, you know, because if you're going to be a small company, I think you have to be really flexible and nimble. And that's how you can sort of personalize your service, and that's how you can get a competitive advantage on bigger companies who can't move as fast or can't be quite as responsive. I think it's really important for small companies to use that, because that's the real competitive advantage. It was just a customer service play. But, you know, good things happen, I guess, when you look after customers and when you do the basics right. And I've always been a believer in, you know, whatever you do, whatever your business is, it could be really unique, it could be really cutting edge, or it could be really traditional, but you've got to get the basics right. You know, there's no point in being having an intention to be a world beater if you just can't serve the basic needs of the customers on a daily basis, you know? So I'm a big believer in getting those basics right.
Do you think that's something you had on day one of this business, or is it something that you've learned or that you've come across either through experiences like with Citroën or other experiences? Is this something that has developed over time?
Yeah, I think it's just developed over time. I think you take your own business quite personally. So if somebody's dissatisfied, you know, you can't help but reflect on that and think about it, maybe keep you awake at night wondering, you know, how can you stop that from happening again, you know? So there is a personal aspect to it, for sure. The real driver, the real pleasure I get out of our business is, you know, having an idea, building it, and then having somebody come along and pay me money for going ahead and for this thing I built. I just get a kick out of that. It's maybe that's like the adrenaline rush. That's like the drug. I need to keep going. So I need to build more things, and I need more people to come and say, oh, that was great. I love what you do there, you know? And so, you know, letting people down is not really what we want in that context.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. You mentioned earlier on that you kind of got an MBA, as it were, when you were with Conduit. Can you remember any kind of, or can you think of any specific things that you experienced during that time that you specifically have actually used now? And I suppose it doesn't have to be, you know, a technical thing, but was there anything that you remember distinctly that you picked up on during that time?
There was lots and lots of things. Personally, for me, I was at one point, I had done a number of senior sort of management jobs in the company, and the company had great success, but then it had a massive failure in the UK with a 20 million marketing campaign that didn't really work. And I was the marketing director. So that was a hard lesson to learn. And, you know, I guess it probably, even though there was a really entrepreneurial company and it had huge ups and huge downs, it probably made me more cautious about how to run businesses and to be sort of, as much as possible, mitigating risks. And so I've never been a massive, let's pile all our chips in here. For example, I've never taken on investors I've always run the business as profitably or as, you know, break even as I can, because it's all just borrowed money from ourselves within our own sort of like comfort zone of what we could lose or if it had to all close down. I've had second jobs. I've gone down the route of, you know, working second jobs to keep myself going rather than try to borrow too much money or try to get other investors on board and ratchet up the risk. And what that's allowed me to do, I guess, is to slowly over time figure out this market, this company, and develop the product slowly. Now, that obviously has pros and cons, but I think a lot of this goes back to what I saw when I worked for Conduit. Yeah, that was a company that listed on the stock market at a 300 million euro valuation back in the early noughties with 11 million turnover. You know, quite frothy at the time. So made a lot of people rich, and then it sort of crashed and it didn't make anyone rich. And then it sort of came bounced back again at the end. So that was a stressful situation for a lot of people. And that wasn't how I really wanted to run my own business when it came to it.
Have you experienced any kind of inflection points along the way? I suppose maybe Citroen might have been one, and the corporate side of things. What have been the kind of the key moments for you getting the business from where it was when you initially started it on day one to where it is now?
Yeah, I think obviously the big launches, you know, the big launch of All Gifts was one, even though it didn't go particularly well, but launching a product onto a market is always exciting. Launching our points platform, that was exciting. But, you know, I also think that the first time I was able to pay myself a wage, that was a landmark. The first time I was able to take on a permanent employee, that was a landmark as well, because these things didn't happen right from the start. You know, we were just bootstrapping with interns and with temps and, you know, any way we could. So, you know, they were all big points. I think when we got our sales up to €1 million in a year, that was that was quite satisfying as well, to see that we could sort of scale it, you know, because we'd been bumping along, trying to get a scale that would, you know, give us hope for the future for a number of years. And then suddenly you went, okay, well, we got to 1 million, maybe we can get more, you know, maybe we can go to 2 and 3 and 4. So, you know, all those I think were landmarks along the way. Not that you have time to celebrate too much, but you'd look back, you go, yeah, if there were times when you go, right, okay, we're on the right track. So that's good.
Was it the case with the business whereby you were building the operation side of things to meet with demand? Or was it the other way around, where you were kind of building products, building out systems, and then releasing it into the market? Can you give us kind of an idea of what that looked like kind of throughout the years that you've been running the business?
Yeah, I think mostly we've been client-led, in that, like, we have, you know, when you develop your own technology platform, you're sort of frustratingly always behind what customers are maybe asking for or what you would like to implement, you know? So, and much as we're trying to, actually in the last year or so with lockdown, it's given us a chance to sort of catch up with a lot of technology stuff. But still, I have a sense of what the market will want in the future. And that's normally reflected in what maybe one or two companies have asked us for in the past. And then next year, it'll be 10 companies asking us for the same thing. So I know that that's what we need to develop, and we need to get to that point. But I think in the early days, I just, you know, developed things I thought would work well and function well and have a, you know, be a nice product. And then went out and looked for customers for it. That was more the philosophy at the time. But as time went on, you built a track record and understanding of the market you were operating in, what they were actually really looking for. And that gives you comfort, I think, that you're going, that you can come up with ideas and then you can go and present to the people and it'll be, oh yeah, great, this is what we've been waiting for, as opposed to what's that?
In hindsight and looking back, what has been the biggest challenge in growing the business and getting it to where it is today?
Well, I think for any small business, that it's resources. It's like, I used to say, I mean, when we first started with wedding wish lists and allgifts.ie, we're doing it in a tiny attic, you know. I was in one attic and my colleague was in another attic somewhere else. And so you come up with a brilliant idea, brilliant marketing idea, brilliant product idea, brilliant something. But then you had to turn around and do it. There was no one else to implement it. So coming up with great strategies was almost like a negative, because it just gave you more work on top of all the other work you were doing. And so I think, you know, and in a small company, you're constantly balancing what you would like to do with what you have people and money to do. you know, and that's the great frustration. You know, I would like to be 3 years ahead of where I am now in terms of product and market and where we operate. But I'm not, I mean, I'm where I am. And so I still have to push that boulder up the hill. And so that maybe is a reflection of the model that we fell into, as in not having an early investors, not having VC, not going global, you know, with a big, massive, big bang idea, and having this iterative, as you said, process where we developed the business organically along, made mistakes, but they were always small mistakes, got some nice gains and slowly built it all up, you know?
Has that eased over time? Like, I suppose it's a bigger frustration when you can't pay yourself a market salary, or when, you know, things maybe if you're not even sure whether something's going to work. Has that gone a little bit easier over time, even if it is still a little bit frustrating?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the big thing for me personally is that 2 years ago, I was a director of another company. So I was doing some work, and, you know, not a huge amount, but I was doing some work on the side to keep the bills paid. But eventually, you know, when I gave that up and focused 100% on this, and could afford to do that, that was a massive liberating experience, because now 100, you know, you don't think doing 1 or 2 hours of something else in a day or in a week even is going to be much of a distraction, because it doesn't seem like very much. But having your focus 100% on one thing all the time is so liberating. It's so less stressful. You don't have to stop thinking about one thing and start thinking about something else. And it's amazing what that has done in terms of being able to bring things forward quicker. That's been a great change, I would say.
You mentioned earlier that you had a failure when you were with Conduit and you had learned from that. Can you think of a failure you've had when running this business, I suppose, on your own time, and it's certainly going to affect your pocket a lot more strongly? Can you think of something that's happened and what you might have learned from that?
Yeah, I mean, we lost our biggest, like a lot of companies have little ups and downs. So, you know, in 2016, we lost our biggest customer, who was doing like probably nearly 50% of our revenue at the time, or, you know, and we lost it because they were part of a UK, an Ireland and UK organization, and they decided to consolidate their incentives out of the UK. So the UK company sort of won out, because the company was now a UK and Ireland company. They sort of just changed their structure. So it wasn't really much about what we did, but it was a big blow, both financially and as sort of just a kick in the teeth as well. You know, that's going to happen, right? You're going to lose business. You're going to lose customers. Maybe it's your fault. Maybe it's no fault of your own. And if it's a big customer and you're too reliant on them, obviously it can have financial implications and it can set you back by a year or two. All these things were true. This is what happened. And then there's been lots of smaller little things that have gone wrong apart from that. And what I've always tried to do is, when things are going really well, or when you win something, and that's a thumbs up, you need to use that as a motivation to kick on. But equally, when things go badly and something happens that is really negative and a kick in the teeth, actually, I try to use that as a motivation to say, well, I'm not going to let that stop me from getting to where I think we can get to with this, you know? So I've tried as much as possible to use both the negatives and the positives as sources of motivation, you know? Not always easy, but that's what I've tried to do.
Do you still take it as personally when things go wrong, or when you get difficult feedback, or is it, has that gotten easier over time as well, kind of when mistakes are made in the business? And, you know,
well, there's two sorts of mistakes. I think there's mistakes where we have done something wrong in the company, and now, you know, we've got about 10 employees now, so a lot of what has to happen through other people. And so having the right systems and processes in place and taking care and time that to work out the details of how everything should work, because we have a lot of moving parts in our business. And then if something goes wrong, we have a way of fixing it. And I think that's fine, because things will go wrong. And so as long as we've thought about a way of fixing it and we've put something in place, and, you know, I'm happy with that. What drives me mad though is where something has gone wrong and it's clearly our fault. and we'd never thought about it, or we just hadn't got the knowledge, or we hadn't got the process, or we hadn't got the training, or that we had the wrong person dealing with it, or what, you know, that drives me nuts still. So, and it drives me nuts because I think I think we should be better. So I guess I don't take it as personally, but I get very, very frustrated if our systems, our professionalism of what we're doing is not up to the standard I think it should be.
Do you think you've learned any personal lessons or just experienced some growth as a leader or as a business person from just running the business and going through these ups and downs? Could you talk a little bit maybe about your own kind of journey and how, if at all, it has helped you?
Yeah, I think what it has done, and I think what most people, even if they're not running their own business, will find as well is that ultimately, if you can get to a place where you're just happy with yourself, right? So I'm not perfect, but I have certain things that I do well. I've got certain traits that you know lend itself to maybe running a business. You know, competitiveness and sort of slightly obsessive at times, and you know, motivated to get things done. I also have like lots of faults. And I've got sort of over time, those faults get exposed because when you're running a business, you know, you're going to be really tested and you're going to be challenged. And ultimately, you're going to fall back on your own self, your own nature. And so you've got to be happy with yourself, you know. I've done some terrible things. I've made some terrible mistakes. But ultimately, I can say, look, I tried my best and I'm happy to be running. I think I'm in the right place, running the sort of business that I want to run and doing the best I can. And I'm satisfied with that. And I think ultimately, if you are not in a situation, you know, ultimately in your career, say, where you're just in the right place, you're comfortable and you're happy, you're challenged, but you're in the right environment, you're in the right culture, then you're not going to outperform other people who are in the right place and are in the right culture. And I spent a lot of time when I was in my, you know, postgraduate, you know, career building, you know, corporate career, just in the wrong company. There were the wrong people, and I performed so badly. And looking back, it's because, you know, it wasn't playing to my strengths. I wasn't in the right place. And maybe I was trying to be somebody I wasn't meant to be. And so I think that's really important. Just so overall, it's just made me realize what the type of person I am, with my faults and with my strengths, and give me comfort that, you know, I can sort of rely on myself, not always to do the right thing, but ultimately to succeed somehow, because I'm just making my own decisions based on my own character that I'm sort of comfortable with.
Have you been able to design your own environment in a sense, or an environment that suits you and maybe attracts the right people into the business? You know, maybe you could talk a little bit about the culture and the people that work with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I right now at the moment, where I'm reviewing our company values, and it's been a really interesting process because I did it before and we had company values, and we actually have our own recognition program internally for company values. But I realized they were all the wrong values, or they weren't as clear as what I wanted to be. So I've spent the last 2 or 3 months having to go back and re-engineer what are the company values. And you know, I got a tip from a guy I have a lot of respect for called Rory Prendergast. And he said, like, you know, your company values have to be your values. It's not a committee. It's not a beauty contest. It's not a vote. They have to reflect your values because it's your company and you've got to lead it. And so these really do sort of start to reflect on what I believe. Now, the thing is, I've took on some really good people over the years, and most of them happen to fall into these categories, and yet they, you know, of these values, and that's but more by look than design. And so now, as we get bigger, so that we only have like, you know, 10 employees, but if we had hopefully 20 employees, they would then have to fit into this culture a little bit better, and that has to be a little bit better defined. And so that's the challenge, I think, for the next while as the company grows. I think it's more important not just to have values, but to articulate them as well.
You mentioned there just about talking to other people and maybe their peers or mentors or coaches, perhaps. Do you have people you turn to and to look for advice and to help you with the business?
Yeah, no, that's one of my failings, I think, not turning enough to people. So I'm very bad at reading business books. I'm very bad at reading self-help books, very bad at coaching and mentoring. And I know all these things would definitely help. I need to do more of that. So I'm trying now, even late in the day as it is, to try to bring other people on board. But I do think it's really important. I do think it's really important to seek out people and get their advice. However, you need to be very careful, because advice is, there's so much of it out there. And there's so many people who will tell you that they can do this and that and the other for you. But ultimately, it's all down to you. If it doesn't go right, it's your fault. It's not anyone else's, because you were given bad advice. That can be an excuse, but it's going to be no good after the event. So yeah, I would say for us where we are now, I wish I probably spend more time looking for people to just help, but I didn't spend enough time, and therefore they never turned up. Or if they turned up, I didn't recognize them. Anybody came to me directly and said, I can help you, I sort of went, well, you know, I'll call you, don't call me. Maybe that's not such a good thing to do. I definitely would probably spend more time, you know, just attend. Every time I attended some sort of, you know, Plato training or any sort of peer training or coaching has always helped. Networking has definitely helped. I at this stage, I'd like to have, a director or two, just a non-exec, just to help hold me to account a little bit more. But up to this point, I think having a business coach at certain points probably would have helped, definitely.
Do you think maybe though, in some ways, it's helped not having anyone? So you've kind of had to rely on your own judgment. I often find that sometimes you get advice and it's really the advice you would have come across on your own had you just sat down and had a bit more confidence in your own decision.
Yeah, that's a good point, because no one knows your business as well as you do, right? Either the person is just going to give you general advice, which is fine. Sometimes that's good because it's cheap and you can just take it and see what bits of it apply to your own business. But if you're going to bring someone into your business to give you advice, they're going to spend a long time trying to figure out what you already know. And then they're going to give you advice. So it's sort of a big commitment then in that respect. So, but having said that, I think the hardest thing is actually finding the right person, the right person to give you that advice. And so that it's not just, and sometimes though, you do need someone to say, yeah, what you're thinking is definitely the right way to go. You don't need me anymore. Go ahead. You're fine. Come back to me if you get stuck, you know? And also holding me to account would be useful as well, because when you've got all the power known to report to apart from yourself, you know, it's probably not always the most motivating and probably not always the cleverest, place to be in either, you know.
How has your role in the business changed over time? And what does it look like today? What does your kind of day-to-day look like in running and growing the business?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, as you've got a bit bigger, we've just had more staff, you know, and that's meant putting structures on things that didn't have structure in the past, trying to let go of certain things, but also trying to make sure that the standards, you know, that are set are being lived up to as a company still. So we don't end up being a company that was, oh, they used to be great, like when it was only two or three of them. Now, you know, they just don't count, you know. So it's those type of challenges. Currently at the moment, we're reviewing our sales processes and, you know, we use HubSpot. I'm spending a lot of time right now just making sure that everything that we do is in terms of systems and people is 100%, because at the end of the year, we have a big rush. It's a big peak for us in November and December, where we do a huge amount of our overall annual turnover, because companies come to us looking to buy gift cards, for example, for the small benefit scheme in Ireland, or programs that we're running suddenly redeem all of, you know, their points and different things like that. So there's a lot of activity, and obviously all gifts.ie is at Christmas is huge. Now is the time. Whatever we don't put in place now, it's too late by the time we get to October, November. And so we do a review of our peak season every year. So we did that in November, December, but now we're in the end of April and I'm still implementing all of the recommendations and trying to make those changes to our processes and to our training and to our people so that we're 100% ready to step up when hopefully we get another bounce in, you know, another increase in sales towards the end of the year. So I'm spending a lot of time, which is great. It's the first time in a long time, I think, I've spent this amount of time not really getting involved in the day-to-day, but standing back and making slight improvements here and there that I know will reap dividends further down the track. And that's been great. So the more that we can continue with that, the better.
This might sound like a really boring question, but could you talk a little bit about the way the company is set up, the different functions, and maybe the kind of management layers, and almost just a kind of company structure and layout about what it looks like? And did you kind of copy that model from somewhere, or did it just come about over time when you said, oh, we need a manager in this place, or we need more layers here? How has that kind of developed over the years?
Yeah, again, like everything we do here, I guess has been organic. Like, you know, we started off needing people, and then, you know, after a while you actually need a team, and then you sort of need a structure, you know. So and then because the ground is shifting all the time, because, you know, the company's developing and growing and different products are coming on board, it's not just we've got to write once, you've got to keep refining it. So now we've got to a stage where we've got a nice structure, I would say. So we've got a team of people who look after what we call operations, which is everything to do with end users. So if you are the recipient of a gift card, points, a voucher, if you're on a program and you're one of the participants, or you work in a company that has given you one of the All Go MasterCard gift cards, for example, you know, and you contact us because you have a problem, that goes into our ops, our customer service side of things. And, you know, we've got a good structure around there. There's got some good people working in there now, managing all of that, knowing what they're about, and able to deal really efficiently with any queries that come up. And then we have sales and marketing function, salespeople who are there, and I'm part of that team as well. We divide our sales up into on demand, which is companies coming to us looking for a one-off reward, through to self-service, where they want to use our platform to manage their own program, through to managed service, which is where we do highly customized programs. So, you know, the more customized it gets, the more I get involved in that sales process. And the on demand, we try to set up a process that those sales guys can just take care of it themselves. And then we have account managers then that look after our clients once they're won. So they could be looking after gift card orders, or looking after running a program, an incentive program. And then we have a technology project manager who runs the technology, you know, with me as well, and implements the technology development. And we have a couple of contracted web developers in Poland. And so that whole process is managed then by somebody else. And then there's just me sitting at the top, as much as possible, not doing anything apart from, you know, hiring people and making sure that we're going in the right direction and we have the right strategies developed.
I'm really interested in, because you're an incentives company, about how these programs are set up within your own company, within Allgo. And do you use it for motivation, and how are you using these things internally?
Yeah, I mean, so we use obviously our own technology platform. It's great to use it and to be a user of your own product, right? So then you can see the failings of it, and you can see the things you'd like to have in it, and you can see how it works. And, you know, even though we're a small company, everybody is working remotely at the moment. So, and, you know, there are daily operational calls going on that I've no involvement with. There are customer service issues being solved. There's orders coming in. There's sales being made. I'm not involved in a lot of this stuff that goes on. So this peer recognition system is quite good, because how it works is that everybody in our company has a budget, has a number of credits. They have 10 credits every month. A credit is worth €5, and they can give a thumbs up. So they can give a €5 reward to anyone else in the company by going on to our All Go Live website and nominating someone else. And they get a reward straight away. They get the €5, but they must choose a company value and they must put in an explanation. At the end of every month, I get the full list of all the nominations that are made. Now, we can only do this because it's a small company. And I review all of those. I see what people are thanking other people for. And I see things that people have done that I had no idea that they had done. And I select, you know, three or four of those to give them what we call a high five. So we give them a high five, double up the reward that they get for that. And also there's an email that goes out to everybody, again, even though it's only a small company, to say who got thumbs up and who got the All Go of the month, which is the person who made the best nominations of other people. So what it does is it in a remote, when especially in a remote working environment, it just keeps keeps everybody maybe a little bit motivated, but more importantly, it keeps me in the loop of the good stuff that people are doing, so I can say thanks to them rather than just missing it and never saying anything to anyone, you know. And I just find it a good way to keep in touch. And at the end of the year, you know, those employees can earn a nice tax-free gift card out of it. So it's sort of a win-win for everybody. And there's very, very high engagement with it, as there is with our other, you know, clients with 1,000 employees. So I know that it really is popular and really works and really engages employees. The key to it is getting the right values. So making sure that they are getting rewarded for the right things that you want them to do. But I see huge benefits in it. So that's something that, we'll continue with. And as we develop more features with that product, we'll be the first ones to test it out in ourselves.
Obviously, you have kind of larger clients, Irish distillers and things like that. Do you work with smaller clients? Do you have much smaller businesses that are using these incentives programs as well?
We have about 1,500 business clients, ranging from one person up to, 3,000 people. What we tend to find is that the smaller companies tend to favor what we call on-demand rewards. So they might run their own ad hoc program, or they might just go, look, at the end of the year, we've done well, here's a reward. So we call that on-demand, and they just come to us and say, hey, I want to get some vouchers. I want to get some gift cards. I want one gift card. Can you explain to me how this tax-free thing works? So we have, I started off thinking, there's no way I want to be dealing with small companies. I want big companies only. But that's not how the market works. When you sell on-demand products, you've got to be able to cater for everyone. And so we can, and we do. So smaller companies tend to, they don't need a big system to run an incentive reward program. They can do it themselves. However, at a certain point in time, companies get to the point where it's just not worth the hassle for them to try to manage an employee recognition program, try to remember who's meant to have got what, who got what. They got thanked, but that person didn't get thanked, or given a HR person the job of trying to sort out a spreadsheet with points or with rewards, or heaven forbid, have service rewards and a lot of like nice trophies and carriage clocks sitting in the storeroom. There gets a point where a company doesn't want to do that. And at that point, they come to us and say, right, we bought some rewards from you in the past, maybe, but now can we actually get your technology to run this thing for us, so we don't have to have this admin headache to do it ourselves? But that's what we really want. So we want to have, as many business clients as we possibly can. And then we want to convert some of those from like on demand, over to more managed services if we can. That's the brilliant strategy if we can get it to work.
So Gary, what are the ambitions for the business in the coming years, and what's on the agenda in terms of your plans for the future?
We have certain goals in the Irish market that we want to grow to. We're making progress, but we're only about halfway there to where we want to be in Ireland. So, we want to just execute our plan over the next 3 years. Basically, we want to become the biggest, indigenous incentive and reward company in Ireland, B2B, So we have a little bit of work to do there. We want our All Go MasterCard to be, a well-recognized brand. We want our All Gifts vouchers to be something that people are really familiar with. We want our allgifts.ie website to be the biggest gifting website in the country. And then looking beyond that, what we really, really want to do then is take all of this technology and this experience and these services and go and find more customers in other countries. So get onto the Enterprise Ireland client list and start looking at other markets and actively promoting ourselves in other markets. Our biggest single client today for our recognition program is in the UK. And we did nothing to find that customer. They came to us through a contact that they had in Ireland. So, there is a market out there. We want to go and compete internationally. We want to grow the business internationally. We want to have clients around the globe, because with a technology product, you can do that. But, goes back to the resources thing, we want to make sure that we're taking care of our bread and butter business and our clients in Ireland first. And when the time is right, have a proper strategy to roll out what we do or certain products into other markets.
Well, I certainly wish you the very best of luck with that. Gary Purcell, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks very much, Connor. My pleasure.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.